Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, marking Child Abuse Prevention Month, with the alarming statistics even from our own community, and the recognition that everyone has a role to play in keeping all kids safe. Also this morning, to your health, how improvements in deep brain stimulation technology are improving the quality of life for patients with neurological conditions, such as Parkinson's disease. And we've got details on Summer Reading Camp and other upcoming programs and events at the Findlay-Hancock County Public Library. Director Sarah Clevidence will tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. So given that the Tortured Poets Department is such a huge smash hit, breaking all kinds of records, and given the fact that Taylor Swift's music is incredibly popular among young teens and tweens especially, here is something that you should know if you are the parent of a Swiftie, and this is serious stuff here. An analysis of Taylor Swift's music has found that she is swearing more and more with each album she releases. And in her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, she actually drops the F-bomb over 20 times. They did an analysis of this, and her new release, her first four albums, her self-titled debut, Fearless, Speak Now, and Red, contained virtually no swear words. They were just pretty much completely clean. She got a little more risque after that. Her next five albums, through the 2020 release Evermore, contained a few but less than 20 swear words. She swore almost 40 times on her last album, Midnights, and almost 60 times in this release, The Tortured Poets Department, including, as we mentioned, dropping the F-bomb nearly two dozen times. So just something to keep in mind, again, if you are the parent of a young Swiftie. And I'm not criticizing Taylor Swift for doing that. She's an adult, and obviously as she has gotten older, her music has become more mature, but the language has also become more mature, and given the fact that there are so many young fans, it's just something that parents will need to know. Now, I don't have kids, and I don't pay attention to all of these things. Does she release two versions of the album, clean versions and explicit versions? Because some artists do. I don't know. But it's something to be aware of if you are the parent of a Swiftie. I just thought I would point that out. I saw it in the Newswire this morning. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. If you're waking up this morning, and I think we've all had days where we've rolled out of bed and the first thing on our mind is, how long before I get to retire? You ever have one of those days? Yeah, according to a new survey from GoBankingRates.com, the best place in America to retire, you're going to be surprised at this, Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. Camp Hill, Pennsylvania. In Camp Hill, you would need about $3,300 a month to cover your living expenses. Also boasts a high quality of life and low crime rate, which were some of the key criteria for this analysis. Other towns that ranked high on the list of best places in America to retire include Northville, Michigan, which is a western suburb of Detroit, and Fort Mitchell, Kentucky, which is in suburban Cincinnati across the river. So, if you're looking for the best place in the world to retire, best place in America to retire anyway, you know, it's not all that far from us. Yes, there are a few places in like Florida and California, Arizona, and all that. But actually, some of the best places are right here close to us. A survey of Americans found that 45% want to retire in a small town or a beach town, but a small town primarily, and only 10% want to spend their golden years in major cities. So that was kind of interesting. Let's see here. This is an amazing story. Certainly one of the most buzzworthy stories of the day. Archaeologists say that they have found two perfectly preserved bottles at George Washington's home, the home of our first president. They found two bottles filled with cherries at his Mount Vernon estate. Both are made of dark green glass and were sealed and upright when they were found under a brick floor that was laid in the 1770s. It was under a brick floor laid in the late 18th century. The estate said the discovery is part of a privately funded $40 million restoration project. And they just never knew that they were there. That's amazing to me. I've been to Mount Vernon and maybe have walked on that brick floor on top of those bottles, but to them perfectly preserved and upright and all of that. Interesting. Let's see. A couple of other items worth knowing here among the first things you need to know as you get your day started. Not to be alarmed at all, but the Food and Drug Administration says the bird flu virus has been detected in some samples of pasteurized milk in the U.S. Put down that spoon in your Cheerios. The FDA announced yesterday, less than a month after an outbreak of the bird flu was found in herds of dairy cattle for the first time, that they have detected traces of the virus in some samples of pasteurized milk. Now, the agency says the pasteurization process is likely to inactivate the virus, but that is a notable lack of certainty in that statement. It is likely to inactivate the virus, the pasteurization process. So they believe that it is still safe to consume, although they point out they are still waiting for further test results to confirm that statement. So, proceed at your own risk, I guess. It's kind of crazy. And a little disconcerting. right when you're having your morning Cheerios. And lastly this morning, among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. We're in a presidential election year, as you know. And although the rematch between Joe Biden and Donald Trump is pretty much set, if some Americans had their way, we would have a new President Washington at the end of the election when the dust settles. A new President Washington. We're talking about Denzel Washington. A poll of 1,000 people ranked 40 stars, 40 different celebrities, to see who that they would like to see in the White House. And Denzel Washington topped the list with 15% of the overall vote. So you get a plurality of the vote among these 40 celebrities that people were given the choice of. Denzel Washington. Coming in a close second was Dwayne The Rock Johnson, 13% of the vote. Third place went to Tom Hanks with 12%. Former California mayor and Academy Award winner Clint Eastwood ranked fourth with 10% of the vote. Tied with George Clooney to round out the top five. Oprah Winfrey was sixth. Matthew McConaughey placed seventh. And billionaires Bill Gates, Elon Musk, and Mark Cuban were tied to round out the top 10, all with 7% of the vote by the time you get that. 36% in the survey actually said that they weren't particularly interested in voting for any celebrity. 21% said star status would actively make them not vote for a particular candidate. And just 13% of respondents said that a candidate's celebrity status would make them much more likely to vote for that person. So kind of interesting who the top choices of celebrity presidents would be, at least according to this survey. Something to think about. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly cloudy today, a high around 50. Partly cloudy tonight, a low around 30. Finley City Schools says it and responding agencies are aware of false and incorrect information being disseminated on social media concerning last week's swatting hoax call at the high school. The school district said at no time during the incident were any shots fired and nobody was transported to a hospital. One window was broken inside the school, a result of students barricading in a classroom. Students and teachers have been trained in the recommended run, hide, fight model, and part of that training is to use items in the classroom to protect and defend the room from any intruder. You can read the full statement the school district released in this story on our website. April is Second Chance Month, and the Second Chance Coalition of Hancock County is inviting the public to an awareness event on Thursday.
The Hancock County Second Chance Coalition just likes to have an event for individuals who are previously incarcerated or coming out of incarceration and trying to get back on their feet. It's a variety of agencies that come together to help reduce those barriers.
Hancock Public Health's Cheryl Miller says people who attend the event will hear personal accounts from local individuals who have navigated barriers to rebuild their lives in Hancock County. Learn more about this Second Chance event and the story on our website. Ohio has become the first state in the nation to screen newborns for Duchenne muscular dystrophy.
DMD is the most common hereditary neuromuscular disease. Now, the state says adding the disease to the list of screening babies get will help parents avoid what's often a long journey in getting it diagnosed.
ONN's Yolanda Harris reporting. Finley City Schools is giving a shout out to sixth grader Zane Snyder, who wanted to give back for Earth Day. So he and some friends and family cleaned up the grounds of Glenwood Middle School. The school district says Zane truly showed integrity and his heart in giving back to his school. See some pictures of the cleanup effort in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Now, today's cover story, you may have seen the blue pinwheels, the Hancock County Courthouse this month as you drive by on Main Street. They're there to mark Child Abuse Prevention Month in April. And I know this is something of a difficult topic to talk about, but the statistics are alarming, even within our own community. And it is the idea is to recognize that everyone has a role to play in keeping kids safe, all kids. Randall Galbraith is with us from Job and Family Services. And like I said, it's a difficult subject approach, but that's exactly why it is so important that we do.
Absolutely. We had 90 children here in Hancock County that were adjudicated abused, neglected, or dependent in 2023. So that problem continues unabated at this point, but we continue to work at it and chip at it.
90 cases that were adjudicated, mm-hmm. and how many more that either you aren't aware of or haven't gotten to that point yet?
That's obviously the case. There are many, many mandatory reporters in the community, from the schools to the hospital staff to mm-hmm. doctor's offices and on and on and on. And we get many, many reports. We last year we took in 1,730 reports of abuse. We investigated 447 of those, and that's generally the case. We end up with our screening tools investigating about a third of the reports that we get, but last year was sort of a bumper crop of reporting. So, and that's actually good. I'm glad that people are reporting.
Yeah. How do those statistics compare to previous years? Are we about the same, or is it going up, going down?
What last year was last year for reports was higher than we've seen at least since 2018. Mm-hmm. Generally, we receive between 1,500 and 1,600 reports a year, mm-hmm. and like I said, about a third of those end up in an open investigation.
Yeah. Is that because of increased awareness and more people, or do we think that the problem is actually getting worse?
I think it's really increased awareness, which I'm, like I said, I'm very pleased with it, that people are calling into us and reporting those cases that they see, even if it's just suspected. In a lot of cases, that's what it is. We don't have, like I said, only a third we open. Most of those are suspected. We just don't have enough to go on. But, I say keep up that reporting. And the number's 419-429-8008. During business hours, after business hours, you call the Sheriff's Department, they will get a hold of us.
we mentioned the number of mandatory reporters, teachers, hospital staff, those kind of things. There's been talk about expanding mandatory reporting requirements into more professions, more professional people who may have contact and may see something. Is that a positive step?
I think so, yes. And it's been expanded over the years. I mean, lawyers, doctors, nurses, social workers, teachers, the list goes on. There are already mandated reporters. Of course, that also brings up the question of training, because definitely those mandated reporters will need training on what to recognize and what to do.
And what is the biggest challenge from the investigation standpoint?
Well, I think that one of the biggest challenges is once we have a report, we do have a pretty large screening tool that we use, a matrix. And I think getting the details necessary to determine whether to go out on that investigation or not is often a challenge. Mm-hmm. What would seem maybe minor to reporter is actually something that's major to us. Or if we miss that, we're not able to do that. But that's okay. I tell people, just keep reporting, keep telling us what you see. Eventually something's going to come from that.
I wonder, in terms of personnel, the number of people that you have to report. I mean, when you talk about 90 cases adjudicated and more than 1,000, nearly 2,000 reported, Right. That takes an awful lot of manpower to sufficiently investigate and prosecute those cases.
I have a tremendous team, but it is very small. We have one person who answers the phones. That's their job full-time, take those reports. As I said, the sheriff's office will forward those reports after hours to our on-call staff, and usually there's one every day. We do have 4 investigators. We should have 6, but it's very difficult to fill those roles, to find people that are willing to do the investigative work. So
very tough work.
Yeah. So those 400 and almost 500 cases are generally investigated by 4 to 5 people.
And I know that a longstanding challenge has been in finding places to house kids that need to be removed from their present living situation during the course of an investigation, because a lot of times you'll want to separate that child from a situation proactively as an investigation goes on.
And you've hit on probably the largest crisis in child welfare in the state right now, which is finding a placement for those children once they're removed. Since the pandemic ended, the number of foster parents in Ohio has not quite halved, but close. We've lost across the board many, many foster parents. Group homes and residentials are having a time, once again, staffing. Same thing everybody else has had, problem everybody else is having. So for people like me, the directors across the state of Ohio, it's a crisis to find a place. And there have been stories, and pretty predominant, predominant one out of Cuyahoga County, about kids sleeping in agencies, and that does happen. Hmm. We've managed to mitigate that here in Hancock County through the generosity of Open Arms, who has a memorandum of understanding with my agency that allow us to house a child for 72 hours at their facility, and I am so grateful for them for that.
So what... given all of that, and we're talking about from reporting to emergency housing, foster care, that kind of thing, how can the general public, because again, I look at this and I think to myself, there are two situations. Either a child is the victim of abuse in the home, in which case the parents are not going to report it. Because they're probably the ones doing the abusing, or outside of the home, in which case parents may not be aware of what's going on, which emphasizes the point that this is all it's a responsibility of all of us, because, you know, the initial think is, well, this is the parents' responsibility, but the parents may be the abuser, or they may not know. I mean,
by the time a case gets to my agency, you know, we're far up downstream. Mm-hmm. From when the abuse is happening. We're there after everything has happened. What I encourage people to do, and what I think the solution to this is to get involved with kids. The more time that adults spend with kids, especially in a positive role model situation, the more likely that abuse is to be found or mitigated. I encourage anyone to, for example, get in touch with Child Mentoring Connection. Mm-hmm. That is an incredible organization. Mm-hmm. For very little investment of time, you can have a tremendous impact on a kid's life. And that includes churches, that includes schools. We are in desperate need of adults to go out and model behavior for kids. And that's how kids learn, is really the modeling yeah. adult behavior.
And how they may eventually open up and self-report.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you have a trusted adult.
Yeah.
That is generally how that happens. And like I said, if everyone spent just an hour a week, and it doesn't have to be something special. I mean, kids need to know how to do things like check the oil in their car.
Right.
Or, you know, how to cook a meal. It doesn't have to be expensive. It doesn't have to be necessarily special. It's just time. That's what we need.
You mentioned the way that people can report anything that they suspect. And again, we can't emphasize enough, you want to hear those reports if someone has suspicion. Because again, the natural tendency is to think, maybe I'm overreacting, I don't know the context, the whole story, so on and so forth. That's your job.
Yes, absolutely. You know, leave that to us. We screen every day at 11 a.m. and on Friday at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. to make sure we're not missing anything. We will take those reports. We want to hear those reports. Once again, 419-429-8008.
And the goal, and I think this is the other important point to emphasize to people, the goal is not to break families up or, you know, take kids away from their parents. It's to correct a situation. Sometimes that's necessary, but not always.
Exactly. That is exactly right. The last resort is to separate children from their families. The first thing we want to do is build support around those families. You know, so often these situations come from some kind of stress, be it financial or mental health or substance abuse. And there are resources for that, and we can wrap those resources around the family.
So, again, just a phone call get the ball rolling if you suspect something. And for those who may feel the call, if you will, to become more involved in terms of foster care, emergency placement, that kind of thing, how do people get that started?
Same thing. They can call that same number. If you are interested in learning more about becoming a foster parent, we do license foster parents. I have a full-time foster parent recruiter. She is fairly new to the job doing, and she herself was a foster parent, so she knows the ropes. And we are desperately looking for good families that are willing to really make a difference in a kid's life.
Again, April is Child Abuse Prevention Month. We all play a role in preventing this and protecting all kids in the community. We are certainly not immune from these issues. And again, Randall Galbraith from Job and Family Services with us this morning. Thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you for hosting me.
Well, you may remember earlier this month, we mentioned on the program that April is Parkinson's Awareness Month, and we were talking about some of the resources that are available locally for those who are dealing with this disease and its effects. There is an event this weekend at 50 North highlighting those resources, in fact, and we'll give you more details on that here in just a bit. But one of the things that we mentioned when we were talking about this is that while there is no cure, continuous research is being done to come up with better ways to treat and manage Parkinson's. And to your health this morning, one such treatment, the latest deep brain stimulation technology that is improving the quality of life for patients like Andy Horn, who is with us this morning, along with Ameza Reitmeier, Vice President and General Manager of Medtronic Brain Modulation. So, Ameza, let me start with you. Talk a little bit about these advancements in the area of deep brain stimulation. What is new here?
Yeah, thank you so much, Chris. I really appreciate you taking the time to highlight this. It's such an important thing, and it's really undertreated in the U.S. So even though deep brain stimulation has been around for 30 years, still not enough people understand it or have the courage to think about it. So We'll first start by talking about Parkinson's. So Parkinson's is a neurodegenerative disorder of the central nervous system, and it can cause symptoms like tremor or dyskinesia or other symptoms relating to loss of control over parts of your body. And as you mentioned, nearly a million people in the U.S. live with Parkinson's, with 90,000 being diagnosed each year, and 20% of those are young during their diagnosis, under the age of 50, like Andy, who you'll talk to later. This disease can significantly impact people's quality of life, making it harder to engage in things that they love to do every day. Simple things that we may take for granted, like pouring and drinking a cup of coffee or buttoning your shirt on your own.
Yeah.
When someone's first diagnosed, you know, the medications often work well to treat the symptoms, but over time, those medicines may not work as well because it is a progressive disease. Or as you're taking more medicine, the side effects of those drugs can become problematic. And when that happens, it's time to start thinking about DBS or deep brain stimulation.
So what does that do? How does it work? Kind of break this down in simple terms for us here.
I will do my best. So you can think of deep brain stimulation, Chris, as a pacemaker for your brain. So it's a small device. Think roughly the size of an Oreo cookie. It's implanted in the chest just like a pacemaker would be. But rather than the leads going into the heart, they go into a very precise area of the brain. And the device sends tiny electrical signals to the brain, and it interrupts those signals that cause problems. So when a person is experiencing tremor, it's really a misfiring of the brain, and the deep brain stimulation essentially interrupts those signals and stops the tremor. And for people who are living with Parkinson's, it really can be life-changing.
Now, Andy, let me bring you into the conversation here. What are some of the challenges that you faced with your Parkinson's diagnosis before you underwent the deep brain stimulation therapy? Talk a little bit about what that was like.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much, Chris. So I was diagnosed in my early 40s, right around the 2015 timeframe.
Mm-hmm.
And my symptoms actually began about 2 years prior with the first thing I noticed, a pretty drastic change, was that as I was walking, my right arm stopped swinging. Hmm. And you wouldn't think that would be a big issue, but definitely when it happens, you don't. It just came on all of a sudden. There was nothing that led up to it either.
Yeah.
And as things progressed, I found that I was having difficulty brushing my teeth, buttoning my shirt buttons, things like that. And as a Navy veteran and a travel enthusiast, I lost my autonomy, and it was very difficult to on a day-to-day basis. And so what I ended up doing is over a course of time, I was taking the pills, as Amanda mentioned, about how it does work up to a point. But I got to a point where I was taking 40 pills a day.
Wow.
And that, let me tell you, with the side effects from the medication and then also the issues with having Parkinson's, it was not fun. I went from an okay day to a not-so-okay day really, really fast.
Yeah.
And so I knew I had to change something about, you know, what I was doing. And having lost my individuality and independence, I looked at other options. And one of those options is the deep brain stimulation.
So compare and contrast where you are now with where you are prior, or where you were prior to undergoing this therapy.
Yeah. It's night and day. It's or maybe even an eclipse type. No, I'm just kidding. It is night and day, truly. I went from where now today I can go about my day with almost without a second thought. There's still things I have to worry about still with, side effects and, things like, or not side effects, but symptoms of Parkinson's.
Yeah. Right.
And it's still progressive.
Mm-hmm.
But every day from now, now it's just a matter of getting periodic adjustments with the modulation device. And that's really where I'm at today. Before, horrible. Today, I'm more functional than I've ever been.
Yeah. Amazing. It's very important to point out, we're not talking about a cure here. This is a therapy, but it is a very effective therapy. And again, becoming more refined and more effective all the time. This is not necessarily new. It's been around for a while. But what is new here?
Yeah, you know, as you mentioned, Chris, it's been around for 30 years, but almost 200,000 people have benefited from it. The newest thing in the device that Andy has is this device is equipped with a sensing feature called BrainSense, cleverly. And what it does is it listens to the signals from the brain, and it gives his physician information about how he's doing, what may have changed since the last time he was in to visit the doctor. And then using that information, his doctor can tailor his therapy to exactly what he needs. His device is always listening, and then his doctor can help respond even better. So these devices just keep getting more and more sophisticated over time. And it's a really exciting time to be, you know, to be thinking about deep brain stimulation.
So essentially a smart device in layman's terms.
Exactly.
Yeah. So where do folks get more information about this? If someone, now again, whenever we talk about health related issues, we always preface this by saying the best source of information is going to be your doctor, obviously. But yeah. In general terms, where would we go to learn more about this?
So, yeah, I would give the same advice that you would, for starters, which is talk to a neurologist or a movement disorder specialist, and they're people who specialize in deep brain stimulation therapy. Or you can visit our website, which is medtronic.com/Parkinson's. And on that website, you can do a few things. You can find a physician who specializes in DBS. You can connect with other patients like Andy who are more than willing to talk about their experience with deep brain stimulation. And you can learn a lot about all the options available to you, including deep brain stimulation.
To your health this morning, Andy Horn and Ameza Reitmeier with Medtronic Brain Modulation. Thank you both for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
We have that link posted at our webpage if you want more information on the technology that we're talking about. And as we mentioned, the Hancock County Parkinson's Network is hosting a resource fair and Parkinson's Empower Walk coming up this weekend. It is Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. At 50 North. The walk is $25 per team. And a team can be any number of individuals who want to participate in the Empower Walk. The resource fair itself, admission is free, again, with more information about all of the resources that are available locally for those who are dealing with Parkinson's. April, as we mentioned, is Parkinson's Awareness Month. Go to goodmornings.net to learn more.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
So, a YouTube star decided to launch a social experiment where he aimed to prove that he could become a millionaire starting from scratch within just 1 year's time. There's an interesting idea here. Mike Black sought to prove that it was possible to go from nothing to becoming a millionaire in just 1 year. And so he gave up his house, he gave up his car, everything that he owned. He sold it all, got rid of it all as part of his challenge. He has quit his challenge now after just 10 months. So he gave up his house, gave up his car. A man, I guess a friend of his, let him to stay in his van. And Mr. Black began his journey by reselling furniture that he found for free. That was his first method that he was going to make money. He was going to start making money by selling furniture that he found for free. Ultimately, it says here, health problems caused Mr. Black to end his experiment after 10 months and after only making $64,000. So he fell a little short. Well short. Not only of his goal, but he wasn't even on pace to reach his goal, $64,000 in 10 months. Yeah, no, that's not going to work. Not going to get to $1 million. Although ultimately, While his million-dollar comeback challenge did not succeed, he did gain a lot of followers on YouTube, and he also learned that one of the best things to sell are tables. He said, I started taking ads on Craigslist in the free section, putting it on Facebook Marketplace, and selling the tables for a profit. So, that's all well and good, but it seems like going to some pretty extreme lengths, giving up your home, sacrificing your health, just to learn the secondhand tables are the top furniture sellers on Craigslist. Ultimately, that's the only thing that came out of that experiment. He gave up his home to learn that. Well, but he's got more YouTube followers now. He's a YouTube celebrity. Okay. Elsewhere in the broken news this morning. Sometimes you don't have to go very far. Cleveland-based company ThrowFlame, which claims to be the oldest flamethrower manufacturer in the U.S., is now selling a new product. A robot dog with a pretty cool trick. It has a flamethrower that can spit fire some 30 feet. The Therminator is being sold online, not as a weapon, but as a companion that can clear brush, melt ice, or be used for your general entertainment. What could possibly go wrong with this product idea? I guess if you have a robot dog with a flamethrower on its back, you're going to find a use for it in some way or another. By the way, if you want to lay your hands on one of these, it costs $9,500, but it can be controlled via an app on your smartphone, which is kind of cool. It also has a laser sight, a flashlight, and extensive mapping technology on board while it patrols your house. So, maybe the best guard dog you've ever seen. But what could possibly... what could possibly go wrong selling a robot dog with a flamethrower to the general public? I don't see a problem here. Let's see. And other broken news items. This out of Florida and MacDill Air Force Base, where an alligator got the better of the airman recently when he decided to take a nap right between the wheels of a tanker plane. The alligator did. A video posted to the Air Force Base's Facebook page shows Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission officers trying to remove the ornery gator, who didn't take too kindly to being disturbed from his nap. The gator eventually was released into the nearby Hillsborough River, according to the MacDill Air Force Base post. The caption read, our newest toothy airman has been relocated to a more suitable environment off base. Special thanks to the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission for their assist. Hey, are there any military, the U.S. military has to call in reinforcements for a single alligator? Come on. Man up there, the military. Seems like they ought to be able to handle something like that on their own, don't you think? Not even the U.S. military wants to wrangle with a gator, I guess. An Oregon man who was wanted on multiple charges saw his daring police dodging end in a rather undignified way. Andrew Hamilton Dimmick, Andrew Hamilton Dimmick, age 33, led police on a three-day chase. During which he was spotted wielding a sword and inhaling nitrous oxide. When he was first spotted, he was able to elude police. Cops later attempted to nab him in a traffic stop, but he sped away. Officers gave chase. He eventually hit a dead-end road due to some downed trees and fled his vehicle on foot. A several-hour search proved fruitless, But he was eventually spotted hitching a ride, still with the sword in his hand, by the way. Hitching a ride with his sword in the hand. Who would pick somebody up on the side of the road hitching a ride with a sword in their hand? I'm not sure, but someone did. Mr. Dimmick managed to elude police. The three-day flight finally ended in a port-a-john, where he surrendered to police after a brief standoff in the porta-potty. After all of that, they caught up to him in a porta-potty. And after a brief standoff, he was taken into custody. By the way, the main charge that led to all of this, Mr. Dimmick is booked into the Lane County Jail for outstanding charges of fleeing a sheriff's deputy. So you probably should have seen this coming, I would think. Probably should have seen this coming. And finally, in the broken news this morning, shout out to 9-year-old Cooper from Derbyshire, England, who took top honors at the recent EC Gull Screeching Competition in Belgium. The Seagull Screeching Competition. Cooper's 9 years old. He has taken on the nickname Seagull Boy after he was bitten by one of them. It's kind of a play on Spider-Man, who got his superpowers after being bitten by a radioactive spider, so the story goes. So he was bitten by a seagull. He's now known as Seagull Boy. After his encounter with the seagulls, in which he was bitten, Cooper eventually became fascinated with the bird and its distinctive call. And he says, yes, they can be a bit scary at times, but they're actually really nice animals. The marine biologist, who was one of the judges at the seagull screeching competition in Belgium, said Cooper was not only the best of the competition's young participants, but he was the best of all of the competitors across all age groups. She tells the BBC he managed to include several call types in his performance, and each of them strongly resembled a real seagull call in a most impressive way. So, kudos and shout out to Cooper, 9 years old, world champion seagull screecher. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Hey, folks, it's game day, and the betting's going to be intense, Drew.
You said it, Dave, but a good pregame routine keeps betting responsible.
That's right. You got to pause before you play.
Good call. Sports betting is hot, but it can be risky.
And pausing to set limits is an all-star move.
That's right, Dave. If you bet on sports, pause before you play to set limits, recognize the risk, and know when to stop.
Learn more at pausebeforeyouplay.org.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. We were talking about family summer vacation season yesterday. Here's another item here related to that. One-fifth of Americans, 20% of Americans, say they think about their next vacation while they are on vacation. This is according to a new survey of 2,000 adults. 21% long to be back on vacation the day they get back. And like you said, 20% think about their next vacation while they're on vacation. The average American spent 11 days on vacation last year and wants to spend 15 days vacationing in 2024. 89% say a vacation reduces stress. 86% consider vacations a form of self-care. 84% say that stress reduction and self-care continues for up to 2 weeks after they return, which actually you would hope it would be a little bit longer than that, but 2 weeks is kind of the lingering effects of a vacation. 8 in 10 in the survey would enjoy a do-nothing vacation where they lounge around at the pool or at the beach and just relax, maybe read a book. That'd be the ideal vacation. 70%, roughly 70% of travelers count down to their vacation as it approaches. And more than half say that within a week of returning home, they find themselves ready to travel again. I have found myself in that situation a number of times. You get home, and the next day you're ready to go again. The survey was conducted by OnePoll and commissioned by Wyndham Resorts, so it obviously also examined the types of accommodations that travelers like and dislike. The top hotel and resort amenities in order of popularity were Wi-Fi access, a private balcony or outdoor area, a large bedroom, a large bathroom, and a full kitchen or kitchenette, what people are most looking for in their vacation accommodations. Nearly one-third, and I thought this was interesting, 29% of respondents in the survey said that they spend most or all of their time on vacation at their hotel or resort. I was a bit surprised by that, because typically when I'm on vacation, I don't like to spend a whole lot of time there at the hotel itself. I mean, I can sit around in a room and watch TV or read a book at home. I go someplace. I want to go and experience that place, either on the beach. I mean, even if, again, you're just lounging around at the beach, that's fine. But rather be at the beach than in the hotel. But for nearly one-third, that's what they do. Kind of interesting, this survey about vacation time. So how many days do you plan on taking a vacation this year? 15 is the average for most people that they're hoping to take this year, just over 2 weeks. And now joining us this morning to talk about what's happening at the Findlay-Hancock County Public Library is Director Sarah Clevidence, who is actually not at the library today. You are in Columbus at the State House for Library Legislative Day. What is that all about, Sarah?
Actually, that's an annual event for libraries in Ohio. The Ohio Library Council organizes this, and it's our opportunity to come down to the State House and thank our legislators for their strong support of public libraries in Ohio and remind them of all the really great things that we're doing for the citizens of Ohio.
Such as, kind of give us an idea of what you'll be talking about with members of the state legislature today.
Sure. Well, one of the things that's always fun to share is the huge number of cardholders, library cardholders we have in Ohio. Over 7.7 million Ohioans are library cardholders. Collectively as a state, Ohioans made more than 39.4 million library visits in last year. So, our libraries are heavily used. And in fact, Ohio has the highest library use per capita in the United States.
How about that? So something worth celebrating there as well. And again, I think we've talked about this in the past. I mean, it's real easy to think, oh, with the internet these days, you can look up anything and everything at the click of a mouse. What are libraries doing? But still, obviously, very relevant, even in today's modern digital age.
Well, absolutely. Locally, only 18% of our circulation is digital materials. Our patrons are still heavily using our physical library collection, and they don't come just to check out our wide collection of materials. They come for our programs. They come, we're doing a summer reading camp this year to help kids who need a little reading intervention. They come just for the sense of community. They come to use technology in the library. A lot of folks, even in our area, who don't have reliable internet at home.
Yeah.
And libraries can provide a lot of things to a lot of people.
And speaking of which, we want to talk about some of those programs. You mentioned the reading camp, which is coming up here this summer. Tell us more about this.
Yeah, so this will be the second year we're doing this program. It's funded by a grant from the Ohio Department of Education. So the reading camp is for students who are currently in kindergarten through second grade who would benefit from some reading intervention over the summer. The camp lasts, I think, about 8 weeks. Kids will meet with volunteer tutors twice a week for an hour. Right now, we are really working to recruit tutors. This is a great opportunity for anybody who just wants to help kids improve their reading over the summer. Tutors need to be 16 years or older, so this is a good opportunity for some high school students who might need some volunteer hours. We have some really great coordinators who will provide support to those tutors. You don't need to have any experience coming in. We'll provide some training before the reading camp begins.
That is an important point. You're not just looking for teachers or professional tutors. Anyone can do this. And how do folks get more information and sign up to be a tutor for this?
More information for tutors and potential students is available on the library's website, finleylibrary.org.
Okay. And that is coming up, what did you say, beginning in June?
Yes. The program will run June 4th to July 26th.
Is there a registration deadline if someone wants to learn more about this, thinks their child could benefit from this?
The tutors and the coordinators will start reaching out to students the week of May 6th.
Okay.
To do some pre-assessments. So, you know, I can tell you last year we had a lot more students interested than we were able to fit into our schedule because we're really limited by the number of tutors that we have available. So the more tutors, the more students we can take. But if this is an opportunity that would really benefit your child, I encourage you to check into our website early.
And if someone has some time, some free time that they can volunteer. As you mentioned, that's probably the biggest selling point there. If you can sign up to be a tutor, obviously the more you have, the more kids you can help. And by the way, this is not a replacement for summer read. I mean, this is in addition to summer read, which we'll talk about when we get a little bit closer to that, right?
Absolutely. This is just an additional, this is really focused on reading intervention for kids.
Okay.
And you know, be a program for a relatively small number of kids. Summer read is for everyone.
Yeah. So don't want to give that impression that it's being replaced in any way, shape, or form. What else have you got going on at the library in the coming month or so?
Well, spring has sprung. So we have our spring art walk. Tiny Art Show is coming up in conjunction with Finley's Art Walk. So that's the first Friday night in May.
Mm-hmm.
We're excited to welcome back Fermata the Blue. They'll be performing at 6 p.m. that evening. And Finley Strength Factor will be performing at 6:45. Our Friends of the Library will be having their big book sale in addition. It'll start that day. And continue. The book sale will continue on to Saturday. So that Saturday, May 4th, is our first ever plant swap.
Okay.
So this is an opportunity if you've got extra plants, if you've got, you know, starts from your house plants or from landscaping plants, you're welcome to bring those in and exchange them with other home gardeners to get some new plants in your life.
Okay, very good. Anything else to highlight here?
Well, you know, we always start to wind down a little bit in May as we prepare for summer read, but we do have a number of our book discussions still continue. You know, small container vegetable gardening for adults will be on Saturday, May 18th. The writer support group continues slow flow yoga in early May. So there's still, you know, I look at our calendar and it's May, we call May our quiet month, and there's still an awful lot happening. So I encourage you to check out finleylibrary.org. Our calendar's right there on the homepage.
By the way, you mentioned for writers, I also noticed you've got a haiku contest coming up next month.
We do, yeah. There's going to be a haiku trail in the Buren State Park. So we're excited to collaborate with the organizations that are putting that together and help collect poetry from our county poets.
Yeah.
So that can be considered for the haiku trail.
And more information on that on the website as well. So what is new in terms of titles, things to check out within the collection at the Findlay Hancock County Public Library?
Well, you know, this time of year, we're always starting to think about beach reads.
Mm-hmm.
So Mary Kay Andrews has one coming out next month, Summers at the Saint, which is described as a beach read with depth and heart, a once popular hotel for the wealthy on the Georgia coast, with a, you know, a new owner determined to restore the hotel to its former reputation. And then at the other end of the beach read spectrum, we have One Perfect Couple by Ruth Ware, which is a psychological suspense. So five couples are selected to participate in a new reality series on Ever After Island, which is a tropical paradise surrounded by the Indian Ocean. But an overnight storm cuts off the competitors from the mainland, and things start to go very wrong.
Interesting. And is kind of very timely. I mean, we have an awful lot of those shows on TV, so that sounds like it'd be a pretty cool read as well. Both of those are available now or coming here in the coming weeks?
Both coming out in May, but okay. You are able to go ahead and put those on hold in our catalog now. Right.
Very good. And by the way, speaking of book titles, one of the other things that I saw on the website, which I thought was a great idea, folks be doing their spring cleaning here over the next several weeks. How about checking out an audiobook while you do your spring cleaning? You can do both.
A brilliant idea. It'll make that spring cleaning go so much faster for you.
Absolutely. Again, Sarah Clevidence, the Findlay-Hancock County Public Library, with us this morning. She is coming to us from Columbus Library Legislative Day at the state legislature. And Sarah, thanks very much for the update. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
We've got a link for more information about all of those programs, activities, events, and so on at the library from our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net to learn more. We'll finish up our podcast for today. Thanks to all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That, of course, goodmornings.net. So drop by and see us virtually when you get an opportunity. Coming up tomorrow on the program, in honor of Teach Children to Save Day, 6 easy savings challenges for families from the author of From Piggy Banks to Stocks, the Ultimate Guide for Young Investors. Plus, details on the Janelle Holman Color Me Happy Walk and 5K Color Run to support local mental health services. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow.